Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I would think the French Quarter in downtown New Orleans, probably the safest places on the planet right now. Steve Scalise joins us right now, the U.S. Congressman, House Majority Leader. Steve, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I know you're busy. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing okay, Tommy, and thank you for having me.
How are you feeling, first of all, on a personal note? Because I know you've had some challenges.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm doing well, but it's, you know, you just got to have a heavy heart. I think everybody in the city is, is angry, frustrated, sad about what happened. I mean, there's just so much loss of life that was just senseless. The terrorist attack that, you know, maybe we'll find out why, but in the end, it, you know, to those families, why doesn't it matter as much as, you know, they're not going to get their loved ones back. And that's, that's tough to see.
And I want to ask you, Steve, as the majority leader in the House, a guy that, man, you've been as involved with the fight against terror as has anyone in federal government almost. I would just ask the difference, because it hit me differently, because this is our city, right? And we're so used to going to the French Quarter and everything else. This is not like 9/11, and I'm not trying to make it a competition. But we went to New York, we're familiar with New York, and we could maybe put ourselves in the shoes. But this is different. This is our city.
Yeah, you know, it's something that, you know, we host big events all the time, Tommy. I mean, you got Mardi Gras coming up. You've got the Super Bowl coming up. We have the Sugar Bowl playing today. And, you know, and it's something we pride ourselves in that, you know, a million people can come to the city and have a good time. And you know, usually nothing happens. And then this happens. And it just kind of breaks that veil. And it just, it hits home, obviously. And, you know, and we know some of these people that lost their life too. That's that's another hard part of it.
Do you have any doubt in your mind? I don't know if you've been talking to the White House or the Department of Homeland Security that every effort is being brought to bear, every stone's being unturned, whatever cliche you want to use, that everything possible is being done to find out why this happened and who was behind it, et cetera?
I think now the resources are coming to bear. And, you know, I talked to Governor Landry yesterday about, you know, making sure they have everything they need. And he's confident they do. You know, the disappointing thing is that it's after the fact that, you know, the one thing that, you know, came out of 9/11 is connecting dots so that you don't have something happen again. You don't want to look back and say, what did we miss? And clearly there were things that were missed here. And it led to a tragedy and 15 lives lost and more that are struggling right now.
What was missed, Steve?
Well, you know, we've been saying for a few years now that the main federal agencies that are tasked with keeping our homeland safe have lost sight of the mission. And, you know, we impeached Secretary Mayorkas, and I think a lot of people thought it was a political exercise. It wasn't. I mean, it was a frustration that the Department of Homeland Security was not focused on keeping Americans safe. And it seems like the further away we get from September 11th, the closer we are to September 10th. You know, the kind of the attitude oh, well, it can't happen again. It can happen again, and it just did. And, you know, exactly how it came about, we're going to find out more, hopefully. But, you know, I do think they've let their guard down some and have focused on things other than keeping our homeland safe. And that has to change, Tommy, because, you know, in every state, I mean, just what happened in Las Vegas, you know, there's an investigation to see if that was tied to New Orleans. You know, the app to rent the truck in the you know, New Year's Day attack was the same app that was used to rent that cyber truck over at the Trump Hotel in Vegas. So, you know, were those connected, and why weren't those things connected?
And there are now reports, I don't know if you've seen them or not, Steve, or been briefed on this, that they both served at the same military base, the guy in the with the Vegas bombing and the perp here in Louisiana, in New Orleans.
I didn't see that, but yeah. Again, we're going to find out more. But it just seems like these are connected. And, you know, the agencies that are tasked with their number one mission being to keep Americans safe. And this isn't a new thing. I mean, I've been saying this for a few years now, that I feel like they've lost their focus. And when they lose their focus, lives are lost here in America. And that's not acceptable.
So I told a story of myself earlier, Steve. When I first heard about this, and my kid got married out of town, and I drove back to be on the air for this because I knew it was important. But the first thought I had when I heard Texas license plate was, here we go, illegal immigrant drunk driving into a crowd. I'm going to be honest, that's what I thought. But now I find, with a Texas plate, now I find out that it's a U.S.-born citizen, military veteran, who by all accounts, was honorably discharged and great in his field and everything. And he tried to be a real estate agent. And he, as far as some audio that I've seen from YouTube, was embracing the American dream. At some place, it went south for him. And I guess the only question I would ask is, when it comes to Homeland Security, look, we have one hell of an immigration problem in this country. I'm right there with you. I agree with you. But when it comes to this specific instance, how can you hang this, or what did Homeland Security miss, or is there anything they really could have done with a U.S.-born citizen that was in the military that just, for whatever reason, radicalized, it would appear to be at this point?
Yeah, and it's not just illegal immigration. Well, clearly, that's a big piece of it. You know, you've got people on the terrorist watch list who have come over, but when you have people that get radicalized, and clearly somewhere along the way he got radicalized by ISIS, he had an ISIS flag on his truck, but some of these agencies have gotten so wrapped up in the DEI movement, you know, call it wokeness, call it whatever you want, but where their main focus is on diversity and inclusion as opposed to security, and they're two very different things, and we've got to get back to that core mission. And this has happened in the DOD as well. And we pointed that out in DOD. We pointed it out in Homeland. We pointed it out in the FBI. And so, you know, if nothing else, let's get back to these agencies focused on keeping Americans safe, period.
But you started, and I'm not trying to argue with you, Steve. I'm just trying to nail this down, because you started by talking about the loss of life and how much it hurts. And I agree with you totally. And I feel it as well as you do. But I'm just trying to figure out, rather than use it as a political situation, did diversity in any way, do you have any proof that diversity or equity inclusion contributed to missing this guy that drove his truck down Bourbon Street, or are you just speculating as to this?
We've seen in agencies when you start focusing on that. I mean, you can only have so many focuses. In any agency, I mean, each agency has a mission, Tommy. And when you move away from your main mission, and, you know, Homeland Security, I'll start there. Their mission is to keep Americans safe in our homeland. And they've started to move away from that. And we've pointed that out for years now. And so at some point, if you're moving away from that mission, then you're missing out on what you're supposed to be doing. And that's when things get missed.
So what, I guess, specifically, could the Department of Homeland Security have done differently, as far as what you know now, to either prevent this from happening, or to realize that the driver of this vehicle had been radicalized? Is there any way that they could have known this? Or do you have any reason to believe that DEI caused any of this? Or are you just saying?
Well, look, we'll find out. But when your sole focus is, you know, you cannot, a zero fail mission is what you used to hear from a lot of these agencies. You know, the terrorists can be right one time. We can be right. We can be wrong no times. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a zero fail mission
but
used to always hear about. You don't hear that anymore.
But is that serious? Because, you know, I looked it up in the war on terror, the different estimates between $7 and $9 trillion. And, you know, that's the way terrorism works, Steve, where they try to hit you at your weakest link at your weakest time and extract the most cost for the minimum investment on their part. And if you look at what Osama bin Laden accomplished with a dozen hijackers or more and a couple of planes, it really is an amazing attack. And I guess the question, and I'm not meaning that in a complimentary way at all, I guess what I'm asking is it really realistic to think you can live in a free society? It was a shooting at an Atlanta club last night. 13 people shot, 15 killed in the quarter, 14 killed in the quarter. I'm not trying to make it a competition, but there's no way in a free society to keep anybody safe from anything, because nobody's talking about, I don't think, to be honest with you, I don't think there's any way you're going to get guns back in this country. I don't think that's a realistic approach to solving this. So just as I think, if you look at an Atlanta shooting with 14 people killed at a nightclub saying you got to confiscate guns, that's not going to happen. It's not realistic. It can't happen.
Right.
And it's not constitutional. Okay. Obviously, I don't think you can say that you can live in a free society and prevent every terrorist attack, can you?
Well, but we had, Tommy. And you got to remember, after September 11th, before September 11th, we did not have a Department of Homeland Security. It was created as an offshoot of one of the many things that they saw in terms of gaps in our security in our country, that we needed an agency to be kind of the overarching agency to be looking out for all of those things that were missed. And so they created the Department of Homeland Security with a singular focus of a no-fail mission. And all I'm saying is that I've watched them get away from that. I've been critical of specific things they've done that have gotten away from that mission over time. And it's time they get back to that focus.
Let me ask you real quick, because there's a story in the New York Times today about vehicle ramming attacks. That's the newest thing that ISIS is hitting on, encouraging. And we talked to a terrorism expert earlier and said that's accurate, that that's what they're doing. You look at what happened in Germany later at the end of last year now. How do you change that in this country, Steve, and still live free?
Yeah, and it's a delicate balance, but we had found that balance. And, you know, we had gone 2 decades. You know, over a decade without a terrorist attack on our soil. And, you know, and look, attacks of violence and terrorist attacks are denoted differently for a reason. This was denoted as a terrorist attack. You know, again, this person was radicalized somewhere along the line by ISIS. Where exactly, we don't know. Maybe we're going to find out. I hope that they will find out how he got radicalized. But, you know, are those things that they're tracking? And there's ways you can find out if somebody is associating with ISIS in a foreign country without violating the rights of American citizens.
Let's quickly talk about the work of the Congress when you guys convene. I don't know what day it is now. I'm losing track of what day it is. But
tomorrow
y'all convene. Okay. Tell me what's going on Friday. That's tomorrow. Yeah. See, you're like me. It's incredibly difficult with the new year and the attack and everything else. Tomorrow's Friday, January 3rd. Y'all convene. What's going on with the Speaker of the House? Are you going to maintain your position? What are you hearing?
Yes, I've already been reelected as the majority leader for the new Congress.
You have been?
Mike Johnson, I have been, yes. Okay. So that's already been done. But Mike Johnson is our nominee on the Republican side for Speaker. But you need to get 218 votes on the House floor. And that takes place tomorrow. So, you know, obviously you've seen some people expressing some of our members expressing maybe some, you know, things they want changed before they'll commit to vote for Mike Johnson. I'm hopeful that Mike gets there and that we wrap it up tomorrow, because we have a lot of spend days and weeks having internal fights amongst ourselves. We've got a lot of work to do, and I've got a very busy agenda planned on the House floor in our first few weeks when we come back, starting tomorrow. So, you know, it starts by electing a speaker. And if we don't do that, then it delays the whole agenda.
Steve, I know you're busy, you got to go, but I would ask you real quick, first 100 days of the Trump administration, what would you like to see done, and how likely is it to get done?
Border security and economic security, getting our country back on track. And, you know, energy security is one of those big pieces, which is important for Louisiana's economy, but it's also important for America's economy. It'll lower inflation. It'll help families who are struggling to have lower costs at the grocery store, lower costs at the pump, your household electricity rates. A lot of those things can be done quickly in the first 100 days.
Thank you, Steve. Any final thoughts?
Look, our prayers just continue to go to those families, as well as the two law enforcement officers who rush to the danger, as they always do, to hopefully, I'm sure, protect more people from loss of life.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, Steve. And just to be thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And congratulations on your reelection. You too. Just to be clear, on October 31st, 2017, guy drove a rented pickup truck into cyclists and runners for about a mile on Hudson River Park's bike path. That was during the Trump administration. So to throw the Homeland Security Department under the bus and say there was no attack prior to this, I don't think is completely accurate. And I hate when politics enter into this with, and again, Steve Scalise saying that diversity, DEI contributed to this. And I don't think anybody really knows what's going on now. And until we find out, I don't think it's fair to start throwing Homeland Security under the bus and everything else, because the focus is being changed to truck attacks, and that's what the New York Times is saying. That's what the terrorist expert told us. I'm not taking up for Democrats. I'm not taking up for Republicans. I'm just saying the idea is to keep the country safe, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, and let's clear up what happened here before we start making partisan political points. Taking a break, coming back, WWL. No, thank you for all of the texts that are coming in. I did hold Steve Scalise's feet to the fire, I think. I am being respectful to him as well, because he is the majority leader of the House of Representatives, and with the office goes some respect that is due. But I do hate when politicians, be they in the Senate or the House, use this when the bodies are barely at the coroner's office to start making political points and saying that they missed this or they didn't do that or DEI this, when there is no fact. In law, they would call that facts not in evidence, not supported by evidence. Michael Williamson joins us now with the United Way to talk about the United for New Orleans Relief Fund. How you doing, Michael?
Hey, good morning, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. Tell me about the United for New Orleans. First of all, thoughts on the terrorist attack yesterday and what you guys are doing for it.
Well, let me start by saying our hearts with the victims, their families, and everyone impacted. We all have some connection to someone. I know several people that were in the quarter, you know, during that tragic event. So our hearts and prayers go out to all those individuals and their families. And as usual, United Way of Southeast Louisiana, wants to step up and be a source of support for those families as they begin the healing process.
What can people do if they want to help?
Well, we did launch the United for NOLA Relief Fund just to offer folks a way to make financial contributions. And those contributions, 100% of those will go to help those impacted, you know, by this tragic event. You know, every dollar will be used to offer sources of support for those families. And so, you know, we know a lot of people want to do something, and the easiest thing right now is just to make a contribution and allow us to, you know, help those families that are in need.
How do they do that?
So they can go to unitedwayscla.org/unitedfornola. You can make a contribution right there. It's very easy. You know, Tommy, I'd also point out that, you know, folks are struggling. You know, this has a significant impact on individual's mental health. And so I just want people to know that they can call, you know, the suicide hotline 988 for free and confidential mental health support, as well as 211. So I want to make sure people know those numbers are available to call. But once again, we know people want to help. And at this point, the easiest thing to do is make a financial contribution, and we'll do our best to provide all the support those families need.
Thank you, Mike. You can go to UnitedWaySela.org to make that contribution. A little bit pressed for time. Quickly to David Hammer, WWL-TV investigative reporter. David, I got to tell you, first of all, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You're a local guy. Your thoughts on this, because I've been saying all morning long as a local, you know, 9/11 was one thing, different terrorist attacks are different things, but when it happens in a city that you're familiar with and when you know the area and the lay of the land, et cetera, it does hit you differently, doesn't it?
It does, Tommy. You hit it right on the head, because the first thing you think about is, oh, my God, I could have been there very, very easily. That could have been me. That could have been my loved ones. And, of course, my heart goes out to everybody whose loved ones were there and were affected by this, or who were killed by this attacker, Shamsuddin Jabbar. It's just devastating to think about how random it is and how defenseless we end up being in these types of situations.
I was glued to Channel 4 yesterday because you and Katie Moore, I know Katie Moore has some, I won't go into it, but some law enforcement resources. I know you have a lot of sources that you were working yesterday. Tell me what some of the things you came up with, you and Katie, if you will, please.
Yeah, I mean, part of the issue with this type of situation is that it's extremely fluid and you're getting tips all the time. You're working your sources and they're trying to figure out what's going on in real time. And the difficulty in reporting this in real time, as we did all day yesterday, wall-to-wall coverage all day, is that you have to sift through the wheat from the chaff. You know, you have to figure out what's accurate, and we don't want to cause any kind of unnecessary panic. But throughout the day yesterday, they were detonating devices along Bourbon Street. They were looking in different places around the quarter and sweeping the Superdome. And it was this uncertainty of whether we could be safe anywhere in the city. And of course, then the Mandeville Airbnb, the Airbnb in St. Rock on Mandeville Street was another point of confusion for a long time yesterday. So we were really trying to get to the heart of it. And Katie was able to establish that there were, you know, potential IEDs that were located in different places. There was one at Cafe Du Monde that may have been among the two that were confirmed to be IEDs. And that's the thing. We're still trying to establish clearly where the confirmed IEDs were and where there were suspicious devices or packages that just turned out to not be IEDs. What we do know and can definitely say now at this point is that there was a fire that was reported at the Airbnb that this man rented in St. Rock that was called in and dispatched to the New Orleans Fire Department 2 hours after Shamsuddin Jabbar drove that truck down Bourbon Street and killed all of those people and injured dozens. That is what we're trying to get more information on now, is how was that fire set, and would it potentially implicate additional people? And the FBI has said that they're continuing to look at the possibility of accomplices, but they don't have any specifics on that at this point. So that's really where we're going to be focused today, on trying to get more details nailed down on that. I spent a long time yesterday also looking into Shamsuddin Jabbar's history, and spoke to people who knew him and had spent a lot of time with him in around 2010 when they were in the military together and doing a training, and said that he was a really smart, great guy. And they're shocked to see how this could be their friend that they knew well, you know, 10, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, and had kept up with on Facebook and never saw any kind of signs of radicalization. And we're learning that he had major financial problems. He went through a divorce that was finalized in September 2024, just a few months ago, and was facing foreclosure on his house. And then President Biden said last night that he had posted social media video saying that he wanted to kill, and So NOAA.com is reporting that he was looking to move to New Orleans and that that might be part of a motive for coming here. So these are all things that we're continuing to follow and we're going to work on very hard today to get hard facts on.
A couple of things. The house on Mandeville Street, you said?
Yes.
That he did stay there, and for that to catch on fire, that has to be, it would be one hell of a coincidence, right? I mean, if that was
right.
Not part
of it. I don't think that there's any coincidence. The question that I'm still trying to figure out is whether that was an IED that were, you know, an explosion, mm-hmm. or if it was something that was set fire, a slower, you know, incendiary situation. And if we can get that nailed down, that would tell us a lot more about whether this was an attempt to from somebody who was associated with him or if this was something where an explosion was set to go off there. So that's the question.
And as far as the explosions, these were not, I'm trying to figure out if it was ice chests that they thought contained incendiary devices that they blew up just in case, or there were actual incendiary or explosive devices in IEDs?
They confirmed to the FBI, confirmed two IEDs. That's confirmed. The question is, you know, exactly where the one, because there were a series of explosions that were, or detonations, I should say, that were done by the bomb squad. Up and down Bourbon Street. There were four of them, I believe, during the course of the day yesterday. And then there was another at Cafe Du Monde. So the question is, which ones were confirmed to be IEDs? So we've got to get that squared away as well today.
David, which agencies are involved in this, just to be clear?
This is led by the FBI out of New Orleans at this point. And then we also have ATF. We have the local New Orleans police, we have state police, Troop NOLA, and then the governor activated 100 military police from the Louisiana National Guard. So this is all hands on deck. This is every agency that's available that's connected to this kind of investigation. And then you have Harris County in Texas.
I wanted to get to that too. Tell me the latest on that, if you would, please, the Houston connection.
Right. So that is the last known address where there's a compound that has a large building and then a series of clusters of trailers on it that is in Houston. And the FBI and Harris County Sheriff's Office were there with armored vehicles. They said that the condition of the area is safe for neighbors and everything, but that was the last known address for Shamsuddin Jabbar. He's stayed with his brother in a number of different places in Beaumont and in Houston, including that location, according to public records that I looked at. So they were just securing that area, as far as I know at this point. No indication of any kind of explosive devices there that I've seen at this point.
Any final thoughts, Dave, before we let you go?
I just think there's still information to get about what the motive was here to attack specifically in New Orleans. But clearly, this is a radicalized Islamic extremist act is what it appears. And, you know, I hope people are able to move forward and continue to enjoy the new year. But I understand the feeling that people have today of fear and concern, and that's why we need to get to the bottom of this and get this all kind of clearly described so that we can figure out how to protect ourselves going forward.
Thank you, David. We'll talk to you again soon. David Hammer, WWL-TV investigative reporter. He and Katie Moore and the entire Channel 4 team, as did our team, did a great job yesterday. They have a lot of sources that they can lean on. The press conference, and Dave Cohen mentioned this earlier, that was scheduled for 10 o'clock, they often do not go off as planned. It was supposed to be at 10 o'clock. It has now been pushed back to 10:15. Governor Jeff Landry, officials from the FBI, LSP, NOPD, Louisiana State Police, NOPD, ATF, U.S. Attorney's Office, are providing an update on a terrorist attack that happened yesterday morning on Bourbon Street. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Walt Leger with New Orleans and Company about the national ramifications of this. Tommy Tucker back in a flash. WWL, I think it's traffic now. 9:48, 12 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, a little bit more than 24 hours after the terrorist attack on Bourbon Street. Walt Leger joins us now. Walt, you're the president of New Orleans Company, CEO. I don't have your title in front of me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How are you, Tommy?
I'm like you are. You know, when you see attacks like this in other cities and you hear the people there say it's personal and it's different, you don't really get it until it happens here, and it is personal and it is different.
Yeah, but it's really tough when you're as angry as I am now and as sad as I am at the same time, right?
Right there with you. That's exactly right. Angry and sad.
I just keep thinking that some evil person out there was sitting around. This is what happened in my brain. He's sitting around and he's thinking, where can I find people experiencing intense joy, happiness, and celebration, and go take that from them and then cause them pain?
Take it from them and others that
our
would.
City.
And others
everyone
that
else.
Would. Right, yeah. Exactly.
And
I'm right
how
there.
Can I cause so much pain? Yeah. And I just don't even know where to start with that except to be angry and sad and mourn for those that have lost. And, you know, my wife and I were down on Decatur Street on New Year's Eve, and we went down to the concert that French Quarter Fest folks were putting on with Tank and the Bangas and Bonorama. And there were police officers on every street corner. And we were so, in retrospect, we were like, man, it was just too perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had to ruin it. And there was so much happiness. And now it makes me sad to think about those families that are mourning the ultimate loss. And then all those who are suffering because of this, including everyone in our community. And, I mean, as you know, I've gotten hundreds of calls from around the country and the world, people saying their hearts are hurting because they love this city so much and what it stands for, and that the unique light that is New Orleans will never be dimmed by some terrorist.
And along those lines, Walt, you know, we live in an open society in America. To think that anywhere you go, you know, 14 people, I guess, were killed on Bourbon Street, and it's not a competition, but 14 people, I think, or 15 people were killed in an Atlanta nightclub with a mass shooting. That's not getting a lot of headlines. We live in an open society.
Yeah.
There is no place in this country that is completely locked down. I don't think, as an American, I would want it to be that way. I don't want New Orleans locked down. As a New Orleanian, I don't want that to happen. But when it comes to the business of the city, I would presume you're hearing from your contacts that nobody is holding this against the city, that they realize this was, as you said, one evil individual that thought, you know what, how can I disrupt local happiness? How can I disrupt national happiness, cause the most pain that I can with the least effort, and hopefully scare people and prevent people from enjoying themselves in the future?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I'm hearing. I mean, I think it's also even a little more than that. I mean, we pride ourselves on bringing people together and in having these sorts of gatherings, and it was an attack on that even,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, we're some of the best at having major events, taking care of people, welcoming people, and doing it really well. We do it so regularly, we sometimes take it for granted, like so many other things we do here. And so, absolutely, people are saying that, I think people are saying this could have happened anywhere in this free society that you're talking about, and that's tragic. But it also is a recognition that we're going to come back from this even stronger and better because of it. And certainly we're going to have to continue to look at ways to improve public safety for people. And we're almost always working on that and trying to improve. But nobody's saying this is a New Orleans thing. I mean, this was an attack on our way of life and on, I think, you know, on the joy that people were experiencing at that moment in time. In one of the world's greatest cities. And I think people who love freedom and who love our country and love our community are rallying around us nationally and internationally and saying, it's not going to stop New Orleans. Nothing's going to stop New Orleans.
We spoke to a terrorism expert earlier. New York Times had a story earlier about vehicle ramming attacks. It's becoming a new thing, the new ISIS tool, the new terrorist tool. I presume you have conversations with your cohorts and colleagues around the country. This is something that's going to have to, at least, I guess, get the attention of the nation.
A lot of my colleagues say that when they have major events in their cities, they have a lump in their throat that something horrible could happen. That's not unlike this. And so cities are grappling with these challenges around the nation and around the world. It's unfortunate that people have figured out new tools to cause harm to people. But, you know, cities are going to have to react to this. States are going to have to support that, the federal government as well. And we'll continue to try to do the things that we can do to be on the, you know, on the prevention side of this. But these are, as you said, these are emerging challenges that communities are facing. And it's what makes communities of interest even more of a challenge, because when large groups gather, it gathers attention. And so any city that's gathering people are experiencing these, they're asking these questions and they're trying to devise solutions to it, knowing at the end of the day that there will always be people working to try to counteract those preventative measures, but we have to stay on the forefront, be aggressive and lean into it. And, you know, I know that'll happen here. That's what's traditionally happened here with our leadership and great partnerships at NOPD and across the region and the state. And that's continuing now, and it will continue in days to come.
Thank you, Walt. Appreciate your time. God bless y'all. Walt Leger, President and CEO of New Orleans & Company. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Newell Norman here on WWL. 9:56 and a half, pardon me, the press conference that was scheduled for 10, that was pushed back to 10:15, has now been pushed back to 10:30. And that's no surprise in cases like these, because they want to make sure that they have as much information that they can and that it is accurate as it can possibly be. Newell Norman joins us now. Former sheriff, you all know who Newell Norman is. Newell, how you doing?
Doing okay. Just, you know, feeling all the same emotions that have been described by every one of your guests this morning and yourself, Tommy.
Yeah, it's different. And you know, you have a unique perspective. I wanted to pick your brain because I'm sure your phone exploded yesterday, having been the sheriff of Jefferson Parish, and thoughts about multi-agency responses and so forth. And maybe if you could give us a little peek behind the scenes, not specifically, Newell, about this, but in general, when something like this happens, talk, if you will, about the wait, let me check that question for a second. First thing I wanted to ask you was, it is different, as I told Walt Leger just now, and you're a local as well, it is different when it happens here, isn't it?
Absolutely. You have the whole range of emotions. Obviously, you have locals who have been injured and some killed, as well as tourists injured, killed. You're trying to accommodate a whole host of that range of emotions that are going on within a community. It's one thing to be watching it on TV and you have 1,000 miles of separation between you and the event. It's a whole nother thing when you have very fond memories of the very same places where this has occurred. Mm-hmm. And it stirs up a lot of emotions in folks. And I thought Walt put it well, you know, sadness and anger at the same time.
Tell me about multi-agency response when something like this happens.
You know, unfortunately, when things of this nature happen, this is a time when you see the best of what everybody has to offer. And I say unfortunate because it takes these tragic events that really causes everybody to come together. Same thing, a lot of it emotionally driven, most of it, thankfully, intellectually driven. Everyone knowing what needs to be done, everyone appreciating the fact that human capital is stretched to the max, that you're bringing a lot of assets to bear to address all of the differing situations. Because if you think about this event, it was greater than just Bourbon Street. You had the fire over on Mandeville Street. Right. You had what was going on at the Superdome. You had the potential of a tailgate party. You had the big event that you were still leading up to that needed to be dealt with. They had to sweep the dome. They had to do a whole lot of things that really disrupted the normal protocols of what happens there. And that's, I think, what led to the decision in the canceling.
Actually, Newell, the press conference is starting, as I understand it. So let's go to that, and then Newell will be with you.